Welcome to Building Tomorrow's Insurer, where we explore the cutting edge of insurtech and digital innovation in the insurance industry. I am your host, Nigel Fellows-Freeman, and today we are diving into the very, very important topic of cultivating the right corporate culture within innovation, within insurers, and it's something that's becoming more and more important over time. And so I could not be more excited that we've got Shireen Dinesh joining with us today. She is very, very deep in agile transformation. She's really, I think if you look across the sector, she's a beacon of modern leadership. And so she's really trying to drive a bunch of thoughtfulness in terms of how you build a corporate culture and really kind of shaping corporate cultures and specifically within kind of large enterprises. She's been at Zurich. She's done some work at Optus, and today she's currently serving as the head of enterprise agility at Bendigo and Adelaide Bank. And so we are thrilled to have you, Shireen. Thank you so much for making some time. We really, really appreciate it.
Thank you, Nigel. That was a lovely intro.
I think really, I love to start these. I love to start in understanding the person. I love to understand a little bit about your story, because I think that really often drives a bunch of decisions that you make over time. And so maybe we can kind of start there, Shireen, in terms of your story from software development to agile advocate. Over to you.
Thank you. Well, yes. If somebody look at my resume or my work history and some of my life history, they will think I can't hold a job and I have been constantly moving around. But I can tell you there are some things that are consistent throughout. So I started as a software and electronic engineer. One day my dad said, look, this is the future. You're going to learn programming. I was like, all right. So I started. And during dot-com boom, I had my own company and we were building massive, large number of websites. And it was really interesting. It was interesting and we were making money. So that was great.
An important combination.
I know. And after a while, when I continued doing that, it was more about managing the work and managing the client and managing people. So I went more towards delivery and deciding what we build and how we deliver something. The fat title for it was becoming project manager or program manager. Then it becomes more about building products and commercializing things. That's where I learned to build a product from 0 to 60, where you get to problem solution fit. And back then, I didn't have these phrases that I'm using right now. It was just, can you sell it? Does it make sense? So it was that.
Yeah.
This was in the startups and scale-ups, the smaller companies. Then I went to banks when I learned what's the meaning of enterprise. Before that, I didn't know what that means. Mm-hmm. And 50,000 people in a company, enterprise. I learned what's the meaning of that and how things are structured and what's the flow of work between these parts of large. Like it was just too big for me to comprehend. So what happened there? I no longer was asked to deliver or build something. I was asked how to set up teams and ways of working so they can deliver. So the way I always say, Nigel, is this. I used to cook when I was delivering, and then I stood next to people while they're cooking. That's the question. Mm-hmm. And then I started to change the way we set up the industrial kitchen for others to cook in it, which is transformation. Distinct types of work, but they're all about how do we get something that is meaningful to the hand of customer.
That's so interesting. And that transition you made from small company to scale up to enterprise obviously all have very different cultural challenges. I suppose moving from missionaries to mercenaries in terms of kind of people who are the first 20 folks who kind of live and bleed the company to folks that are it's a career transition and maybe they're moving through the company to another place. And so what did you see in those transitions of experience within culture that maybe were consistent across those enterprises and maybe were very different?
Yeah, there are a couple of major differences. Okay, if we put the word culture aside, there's one key, actually there are two key distinctions. One is the speed of decision making. Second one is the communication between parties, right? So speed of decision making in startups and scale ups is quite high. Like you will make a decision like that. There's five of us sitting around the table. It's you, me, and a couple of things. Guys, we call, should we do it? Yes, no, go ahead. We'll do it exactly like when you're sitting in a pub and say, okay, should we go to the next one?
Yeah.
They say yes. All right, so we go. But imagine there are 250 people and you need to get a couple of parts into making that decision. Is one, selling the idea of let's go for next thing. And then, okay, now mobilizing and moving people to get something done. So that's the decision making. And the other one is that how to communicate. If it's 5 to 10, 20 of us, one Slack channel or WhatsApp channel is enough. But when it's 250, then you need a different way of communicating with different parts.
And can you extend that a little bit for me? Because that's, that kind of decision-making is something that I know a bunch of folks that were listening to this who work in younger companies is a thing that frustrates them about trying to work with enterprises, speed of decision-making. And the reality is that there's a lot more risk that sits around it, right? And therefore, lots more people have to sign off on a thing before it gets done. And so to extend that to say, kind of thinking about insurance specifically and their company culture, how does those two kind of core differences or those core components of enterprise decision-making impact how they do transformation, impact how they kind of maneuver the organization over time?
You mentioned insurance firms, right?
Mm.
Enterprises. Insurance is a long-standing, I don't want to say old, but it's something that has been around for a while.
Long time.
So it's very different to, spinning a product and app and becoming a product-led company. Mm-hmm. So you need to acknowledge that. That's just the way it is. And that's why transformation is very important for insurance particularly and a few other financial services, that the thing's been set and done rightly in a certain way for a very long period of time.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe since the beginning of after accounting, they've been done in a certain way. Mm-hmm. And what's transformation? Transformation is change, a large number of change in a very short period of time. Otherwise mm-hmm. it will be called change. All right. So that's that. So in terms of communications and decision making, and what frustrates people is that you've got to acknowledge that you are working with a system, with an organization that has been there for a very long time. You're dealing with a mansion, not a tent.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to learn that there are certain rules. So we're not saying that we can't change the rules. We certainly can. We must. We should challenge it. But we also need to incorporate into our everything that we do, particularly in our transformation planning, roadmaps, how we address and how we change something that has been around for 200 years, maybe more.
And how would you advise those folks in those firms today? Maybe it's not just insurers, maybe it's any large enterprise, Optus, kind of you name it. How do you then advise those teams, those middle managers that are making those kind of transformational changes to their teams to optimize performance, etc.? Kind of, what have you got? Any kind of like key pillars of that transformation you always lean on?
The short answer to this one, and I always have tweet size answer for everything. And then the tweet size answer when you're changing is this: not everyone sees the things the way you see.
Mm-hmm.
When you are talking about change, you need to understand that different people with different skill sets throughout the organization, they are looking at their own patch and their own work, and they see the work from their own perspective, from their own skill set. So the person that is in procurement and a person that is in finance and the person that is underwriting and the pricing and communication, these are significantly different mindset skill sets, tool sets. So now you're coming out and doesn't need to be agile transformation. It could be business transformation from any aspect, digitization, digital transformation, which are different things, automation, incorporation of AI, incorporation of security. So these are different things that needs to be applied to this body of organization. And different people with from different practices and crafts, they look at work and look at organization from different perspectives. Mm-hmm. So your message needs to match how they understand it, which is normal human language.
Yeah, it's, everyone has their own kind of, everyone cares about their own sphere of influence, right? And in terms of what's around them. And so kind of how does a thing that's being communicated match with kind of my view of the world?
Rightly. So it's not, we're not judging them that I'm not saying that they are limited. I'm actually not saying that they're limited in their views. I'm not saying that they're tunnel vision. I'm saying that they've been engaged, hired, and tasked to look at certain things in a certain way. And now you're saying, like, for example, your funding model is annually, and now you're saying we want to change the funding model to quarterly. Well, it's a huge shift for someone that is in finance, because you're literally saying, I need to make it quarterly. And what they could hear potentially is that you are multiplying my work by four. So I'm not going to, I don't understand it. But that's not what we're saying, because we reduce the amount of work quarterly. That's one example, simple example. There's a lot of that. Matching your language of transformation to the recipient of it is the key.
And we're seeing, and when you're thinking about that communication, just I'll go a little bit further in here. I know you've done some agile transformation work, and I'm sure there's some there's been some stories where it's gone really well, and there's some stories where there's some challenges. When you kind of, I suppose, you look around at the banking and the insurance sectors, we're a little late maybe, or a little like kind of coming slower in terms of maybe adopting those kind of methodologies. And so what have you seen those kind of enterprises do in terms of taking on the agile transformation and the agile work manner? Kind of what's been worked really well, and kind of maybe what's been the challenges?
All right. So I always say your ability to cook a recipe doesn't take away or add to the recipe, right?
So that's still a recipe.
Yeah, still the recipe is that does if you are a great cook generally, right? I give you a new recipe because you have a lot of good understanding of how things are, you can most probably pull it off. But if it's the first time and you can't even, you know, make a, you know, normal scrambled egg,
yeah,
if I give you even the most comprehensive recipe with all the videos and everything, you probably won't come out as good as someone that has been, you know. So that's the first thing. It has nothing to do with agile or, and I'm talking about framework here with capital A, which is a defined framework. I'm not talking about agility. So all these framework prints to anything that has a name that is like written in capital, it's a recipe. And how we cook it, it's really up to us and so many other factors. Therefore, you can see even a bunch of really good people that are from one company, because it's very common. They bunch of practitioners or experts from one company get hired by the other one. And you come here and say, well, I don't think I can do anything here. Well, not as fast as what I do. It's just because recipe requires a lot of other things to be ready.
Yeah.
For you to be able to roll out and get some meaningful output and outcome from it.
Totally. And do you have any anecdotes of maybe things that maybe have gone well, or maybe kind of things that look like examples of it going well, or examples of it just maybe there being resistance to change?
Yeah. Anything that you do in a small and defined way, most probably will go well. Mm-hmm. The moment you try to say, I'm going to paint an entire house and I'm going to do it all at the same time, and I've never done this one before, it's most probably not going to work. So that's number one. even in the same company, if you just done 1, 2, 3 areas and you say, okay, it's working. And then you suddenly try to scale it. That's meaning trying to paint everything with the same thing. Most probably not.
Interesting. And was there differences between sectors in terms of the type of people that were attracted to a sector? Call it banking, call it insurance, call it telecoms, whatever the sector is. Did you see any nuance of the people and therefore kind of how they responded? Or is that a complete red herring? And actually it was just a general big company generally responds in a similar way.
I am actually thinking about this because I've worked in so many different industries. And
yeah.
Majority of them, before I start my own business in executive coaching and advisory, majority of my work was not on my resume. Mm-hmm. Because it could be interpreted as I'm not loyal to something.
Yep.
So I'm thinking to answer this question from health to FMCG to be honest, the key thing that will make it, make it or break it, is how you are able to see something from customer perspective.
Interesting.
And it's particularly in insurance industry, because insurance is basically managing a risk profile. And then based on that risk profile, there are some factors that impact that risk profile.
Mm-hmm.
Then you start with managing your own risk profile, and then you start designing your product and your pricing, and then making your offers. So companies that they are thinking from customer's point of view, and they are very customer centric. I know it's a jargon, but really, truly thinking, okay, what's my end customer wants? Mm-hmm. Those will really go through the transformation a lot quicker and a lot easier than companies that they're thinking, okay, I've got this service or I've got this product, now I've got to sell it, who can I go to? So that's the key difference. But I don't think I would say across the board with all the industries that I've been, from trading to money exchange to travel to insurance, all of that, if an organization has the culture of serving customer first, transformation will fly a lot easier, because no one disputes that we need to serve our customers first. So everything will fly. And we know that if we do a good job for our customers, money comes in. So that's always aligned with creating value.
Wonderful. And that's so interesting. Has that changed at all over history? When I say history, I mean kind of maybe your work history in terms of when you started working with companies, when you first started, to how you work with companies today. Have you seen an evolution in thinking of the leadership of kind of what are those shifts that you've maybe seen happen? And maybe when you're kind of looking forward and now advising companies today, kind of what are you kind of advising them in looking over the next 5 or 10 years, the kind of shifts that happen? I'd love to kind of hear about that evolution. Have you seen it?
Definitely has changed. Two areas, not just customer first, but also employee first. So companies that they are now having the best culture, the companies that they are the ones that, have something new to say, you know, and they are doing it, really doing it, not putting a messaging around it. Two things has changed, that starting with customer outcome,
mm-hmm.
which is a big word for who do we serve? Are we serving our profit and bottom line, or are we really trying to help this person on the other side of the coin? And are we truly caring about our people, or are we just saying it? Mm. So these two shifts, to me, they're prominent. I can see it.
And do you see it in terms of like words versus actions, in terms of when like hard decisions need to be made? Is it when money needs to be deployed? Is it when things go wrong, but you have to keep on going? Like, how do you see in real life, in real terms, how do you see, when it's not just words, it is action?
There are some companies that, they just put messaging around it. It's just words, lip service, or they've heard something on, social media or one of the talks, and they repeat it, and you're just like, what is it that one of these words is empowerment? Like, what is that? When you say,
but if we put it on the website, Shireen, if we put empowerment on the website, then that means we believe it.
But it's such a big word that doesn't translate. You don't tell your teenage, I want to empower you to be able to do what you say. I'm going to give you whatever you need, all the tools that you need. Go figure it out. All right. That's really, truly empowerment. So you can hear that a lot of these words, even this customer centric or whatever. Mm. It's like an agile and so many new, and they have long, I have a long list of glossary of these things that they, they thrown around, and you just like, at the end, tell me in real words, like simple words. And believe me, I am expert in that language, just because English is not my first language. So I learned consulting and professional language. And then at the end, it's like, instead of saying, we took the next action, blah, blah, just say, once this is finished, we just did the next thing. You know, it will land a lot better. Everyone can connect to it. And yes, you do see two groups, and you don't need to, no one needs to be super smart. People's bullshit detector is on. Like, they can tell if someone is
real. They can tell quickly.
It's easy. Yeah. I think it's easy.
Easy.
Yeah, to be a spot. To spot it.
We, the bunch of execs that we speak to at the moment are all scrambling around to put some AI practice in place. They're all kind of thinking about how it will impact their organization on a kind of a profit, on from a profit perspective, from a product point of view, but like, I think it's going to affect people very heavily too, and in both in role creation and potentially in role, like changing roles that exist today that may not exist in the future. And I think it might kind of change how organizations are structured. Have you got any views on that? Like, have you got any views on maybe actually, Nige, that's absolute rubbish. It's going to, this is all a fad and it won't change at all. Or actually, you kind of see some green shoots of kind of the, of change of org structures and how organizations are kind of put together.
It does have impact and it will change everything. And the best thing is to gain the skill of learning. So you do know about meta skills. Mm-hmm. Normally, meta skills are skills that sit above the other skills, and they are like critical thinking, ability to learn a new skill, ability to, there are certain things that allow other learnings to happen. They're called meta skills. And so ability to learn something new, regardless of what it is, it's a meta skill. So instead of thinking I'm learning to learn AI, I would have spent time and in the organization and changing culture that I need to learn learning. Mm-hmm. Today is AI. Tomorrow is going to be security. The day after that is going to be augmented reality. The day after that is going to be incorporation of blockchain in value chain distribution. So I don't know what it is going to be. But it doesn't, it shouldn't matter. We need to learn learning the stuff that we don't know without losing our shit.
And how do you think you help organizations kind of make those practical steps in terms of, if you were, I guess, kind of talking to tech leadership in an insurance carrier and you want to kind of help that organizational mind shift towards kind of embracing these kind of digital innovations, whether they're AI, whether they're AR, whatever the blockchain, whatever it is, kind of what kind of practical steps would you kind of talk those tech leaders through?
Create evidence of success. Mm-hmm. It's the short answer. So instead of trying to, like, again, create a spacecraft and massive thing to show that we can. Instead of that, create 25 small application of it in areas that is meaningful, is in your control. You can chew it. You can create evidence that we can do it. So once your muscle of your team and your organization gets stronger, then do more of it.
And is that how you would extend, you would extend that into kind of getting broader board buy-in? Obviously, because I imagine a bunch of these execs are having these thoughts, but they need to take it up to a board and sit down and prove why them spending $30 million in this area is the right thing to do. And so is that kind of similar in terms of how you'd approach that?
Exactly. I work with executives. I have a triangle that they are futuristic. They want to take us to the future. Mm. They are caring for people and the planet, and they are driven and ambitious. Because traditionally, people that they were working, like they were caring for people on planet, they were the softy, cushy people that you knew that they are caring about community. But if you wanted to drive your numbers and put something in front of board, you would talk to the other one, which is more towards Wolf of Wall Street. So what I'll do is that I bring these two together. And the people element of this is this. When you want to present something to board to get your budget, you normally need to ask for a big budget because you want to go over a period of time. So first, before you go there, create a couple of wins internally with what's available to you so you have some evidence that we currently what we have. I've been able to do that. So literally, this is what I do. I practice board presentation with my clients. So present to me and make your case. And if you just out of blue go to board and say, I want 55 million for doing this across this, and it's like, well, you haven't done anything. We don't. And look at our workforce. We have zero knowledge in-house, and market is, for example, very tight for this skill. So how are you going to pull it off?
Yep.
So what you need to do is to present a couple of cases that, look, with what I have, I've delivered this. Mm-hmm. Now, here is my roadmap that if I'm asking for this money, for this investment, this is how I'm going to stagger use of that money and what milestones I have. And these are my success criteria. So you know that I'm not just asking for money.
Got it. To summarize that, kind of bringing some evidence, having small milestones, kind of basically packages up that business case versus it just being a, I think I kind of need this. You've got some sense of this is kind of what we've proven so far. And if we put some kind of gas on the fire, then we can kind of grow this really effectively.
And it's good for that executive as well, you know, because they are human as well. They don't know if they can pull it off or not. Mm. A lot of executives that I work with, the things that they share with me privately, and they do that with yourself as well, is that not what is what say on the floor, which is normal. Yeah. I don't talk about how my business is going with a lot of people, but I do have a few people that I confidently and confident will share with them the reality. Mm-hmm. And this is needed for senior managers' internal confidence that I can pull it off.
Yeah. And if you to follow that a little bit further in terms of the qualities that those leaders need. And so we're talking to, I guess, a bunch of folks who listen to the pod are kind of those kind of middle managers and execs of those insurers who are looking to put these business cases together. And maybe even below that in terms of those middle managers that are aspirational to become those execs and sit and make those kind of calls. And is there any core qualities that you think about that they should kind of look internally, reflect on themselves, say, do I have those? And if not, how do I get them? Have you got like a suite of qualities that you would recommend those folks to think about and try and build on?
Well, the key one for me that I try to live my life and is futuristic, like not being afraid of future. Don't wait for future to come at you. Don't be at, you know, at effect of it, be at cause of it. So you start, first thing is like, sit and look at, if I was in charge and I had all the things available to me, where would I like to take this thing, this whole organization, my community? So it's a little bit of deeper conversation that you need to have with yourself. And that's the true conversation. And for me is what I want, what I aspire, what I hope to bring to world is truly is that we leave this world a little bit better than how we found it. If I do that one, is one. And the tools that we give executives is not just another pack or another tool or another that I truly stopped talking a lot about Agile and I started to look at a lot of deeper things because you can acquire knowledge. Mm-hmm. You can either outsource the skill or service, but what you stand for and what traits you have, you can't outsource that. You've got to be that. So after a certain level, the work that we do is more internal in order to progress and be impactful. Because you already have done the progress. If you are exec or exec to be, that's what I call them.
Yep.
You've already done the progress. So what's the next level? Next level is impact. And for that, futuristic is one of them. Action taker, they are mostly action takers. That's why they are here. And risk taker. Risk taker, and this is the sign for it, there are days that you are presenting something and you truly are scared. Mm-hmm. And if you are scared about saying something and you've done all your deep work and thinking and you know truly that's what you stand for, that's the right move. And you know that you've moved into a space of leadership and you know that you are moving something forward. The first person that you're moving forward is yourself. And that's good. That's a good start.
It's a very, very good start. I'd like to kind of wrap on taking that a bit further. When you said kind of futurist, and I like to think of myself a little bit as a futurist. I like to try and sit down and reflect and look into the future a little bit around kind of maybe not where we're here today, but kind of where could we be? And then how do we kind of both kind of plot a chart towards it, but also help kind of create and change it? But if you kind of think about, I'm sure you'd think about a little bit in terms of organizations of the future, what would they look like? Take us like 50 years into the future. Will kind of our organizations look the same? Will they look different? I'm interested in how you think about that.
When I say there's one key change in my view, and I hope that I am a facilitator, contributor, catalyst for it. Traditionally, when you look at the organization, you see this tree view, you know, the CEO is on top and then the exec level and then comes down till that little person at the bottom, which some of them are actually the thinkers, like the ones that they design and think and, you know, truly do the thing.
Yeah.
So that tree view as org chart is quite well ingrained in everyone's brain. That's the organization. So my dream is that in the future, org structure is made of many little circles that they are all focused around something to be delivered for customers. And the leadership is holding that circles together. So I have a bunch of real circles that I use them when I teach this and I talk to them and I say, like, this is not going to happen tomorrow, but I hope that I can show you how you can get the organization to that point. Because each circle, if you think of it tradition, if you think of it as a big afternoon barbecue in a home, all right? So there are a group of people that they are around barbecue, a group of people that are looking after the little kids. There are a group of people that are preparing salad and things. There are a group that are playing. So there are little circles. And then the host and a few other key people are holding a whole thing together. So that's a community style organization. I believe in the future, our organizations will be designed that way.
That is so wonderful. That is a wonderful vision, and I love it. And I don't. It's a vision that you'd love to be part of, right? You'd love, like, kind of everyone to be part of a community. And I'm knowing a few folks around you are working towards a single goal, but all kind of collectively working towards a thing. I think is a wonderful, wonderful vision. And maybe we can make it so. Maybe we can have another pod in 50 years' time and see. We can reflect back and see how the org looks. That'd be great. Look, I have the analogies you've given today have been like around the cooking. There's been brilliant. And like, it brings these, I guess, these kind of theories of kind of orgs, and like makes it into like a real tangible thing that you can kind of draw a line between. It's been brilliant. So thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure to have a conversation with you today. I hope everybody at home, I hope you've enjoyed the episode. You can kind of watch the video version of this if you head to our YouTube channel. Obviously, if you'd like to hear more from industry leaders who are kind of pushing the boundaries and guiding insurance, please do check out our other podcasts and of Building Tomorrow's Insurer. Shirin, thank you. Make sure you follow our content, and wish you the best of luck with changing the organizations of the future.
Thank you so much, Nigel. It was absolutely fun.